So we're getting close to the end, and I would like to thank all the people here, I mean all the speakers that have accepted to come, and it was a nice colloquium, I think. I mean, the two very interesting days. I would like to thank the audience as well, and I will tell you a few things before we split. The first part of my talk won't be on perineuronal nets, but I will get to the cortex more or less at the end, and you will understand why I'm going through the substantia nigra and the aminergic neurons when we get to the cortex, because many of the avenues that we are now exploring in the cortex take their origin in the work done by the people working on Parkinson's disease, in particular on mobile elements. As elements induced by the oxidative stress, which, as we know, also takes place in the PV cells in a very natural way, not always a pathological way. So, as you know, I mean, yesterday Ariel just reminded you that my lab, for a long period of time, has been working on the non-cell autonomous activity of these transcription factors, homeoproteins, and which can regulate translation and transcription in a non-cell autonomous way, but also the epigenetic state of the cells. And we believe that given the conservation of the signaling, the sequences responsible for getting in and getting out, we believe that probably a very vast majority of these transcription factors can be transported between cells. As Ariel told you yesterday, I mean, we cannot mutate these sequences which are responsible for getting in and getting out, because if we mutate them, we also modify the cell autonomous functions. And then this will not allow us to discriminate between cell autonomous and non-cell autonomous functions. And this is why I just put this slide, because I will have to use it at some point. We developed this technology, which was to fabricate mice that can express single-cell antibodies, inducible single-cell antibodies that can be secreted and interact with the homeoprotein in the extracellular space, so that we can block the protein outside without modifying the autonomous function, and thus be able to discriminate between cell autonomous and non-cell autonomous activities. Now, these transcription factors have been discovered as developmental factors, okay, but they are not only developmental factors. In fact, they are expressed throughout life, but their patterns of expression is modified with time. Okay, so that what you have, for example, if you look at the TX2 and NGRAL, what you have at E11.5 and E15.5 and P56, which is more or less adulthood, is not the same thing. And indeed, the functions are not the same. And the non-cell autonomous functions are not the same. So far, we demonstrated that they are involved in boundary formation, in cell migration, in axon guidance. And these are all non-cell autonomous activities, right? Requiring secretion and internalization. And as you know now, in the regulation of cerebral cortex plasticity, as was beautifully illustrated this morning by Takao, and yesterday by Ariel. Now, I will just now describe what we've done on Parkinson's disease, because these proteins can be internalized, they can also be used as therapeutic proteins. Okay, so this case is not the internalization and secretion, you're just making the protein and injecting the protein in the brain, a DNA protein getting inside the cells, and see what happens. Now, this work was done primarily in my lab by the people who are listed here. And Laure, in fact, initiated this work. Olivier did a lot of work on that. And the people here are the people presently in the lab. I could find the name of Rajiv again. Forgive me, Rajiv, for the other time. I just forgot you, but... Julia and Rajiv are sort of, you know, taking care of all the younger people who are on this list. And we had a good collaboration with Patrick Brindin for a while, and we're now collaborating with Jeff Cordova on studies done on monkeys. I will not show you the monkey stuff. Okay. Now, NGRELD, one of these transcription factors, is expressed in the adult in the substantia nigra, which is this structure here that degenerates in Parkinson's disease. Okay. And it's a very, very colocalized expression between NGRELD and tyrosine hydroxylase, which is indeed is specific of these cells, as you can see here in the adult by in situ hybridization for NCAL1 and NGRELD2. So the function of NGRELD in these adult animals, here the mice, but you know, NGRELD is expressed in all species, was not known, so we use NGRELD1 heterozygote, meaning that we lose one allele out of four alleles, right? Because you have two NGRELD2 alleles and one NGRELD1 allele. And when you do that, you can see that you have a retrograde degeneration, which is in the striatum. You see you have these big bulbs forming, which is a Wallerian degeneration symptom. And you progressively lose your TH cells, more in the substantia nigra than you do in the VTA, very reminding of the Parkinson's disease phenotype. And indeed, you develop the non-motor and the motor behaviors that are reminding of Parkinson. Indeed, it's not Parkinson. These are mice, okay? So what was done was to see whether in animal models of Parkinson, MTTP, alpha-synuclein, 6-hydroxydopamine, is NGRELD protective? And yes, NGRELD is protective. You can save the cells from death when you infuse or inject NGRELD, as you will see later. And what is more interesting is that even in a normal animal, which was not treated by one of these drugs, if you inject NGRELD, you have an increase in dopamine synthesis above, in fact, the normal concentrations. So that if you stop cell death, each remaining neuron, if you inject NGRELD, will make more dopamine than it should normally. And this is why we hope that this protein can be disease-modifying in Parkinson's disease. And we are developing this protein as a therapeutic protein. We are also developing the protein as a therapeutic protein because the effect of the protein is long-lasting. And in fact, although this is a bit difficult to reproduce, a very tough experiment, if you inject NGRELD on one side, you have this rotation produced by the injection of amphetamine, and this can last for several weeks. We have now the evidence in the monkey that the effect of injecting NGRELD can last for at least 22 weeks in the monkey. So we need to know, how is NGRELD working, and we did an RNA-seq experiment on the laser microdissected substantia nigra, as you can see here. And when we did that, the genes which are modified, with the highest probability of significance, are in the DNA damage and chromatin remodeling pathways. So that, in fact, if you remove one allele of NGRELD, when you still have all the neurons in place, it's only 6 weeks, the genes which are upregulated are in these two pathways. Other genes are also upregulated. These two families are extremely significant in terms of difference. And in fact, if you look here, for example, at the nuclei of the TH cells in the NGRELD heterozygote, you can see that you have these little spots here which indicate that you have DNA breaks. In fact, you have 15% of your cells that show a high number of DNA breaks compared to only 2 or 3% in normal animals, and less so in the VTA, which will degenerate later. Okay. It's not only DNA breaks. Many marks are, epigenetic marks are modified. Here you have an example, for example, for the H3K27-methyl-3, which is modified in distribution and quantity, as this was quantified. But also lamin B, H3K9-methyl-3, the chromocenters, and I'm not going to describe everything. Another marker which is modified is the nucleolin, As you can see, this is a normal staining for nucleolin in the nucleolus, and this is what happens after several weeks in this case. In the nucleus, you have this modification of nucleolin distribution. So it seems that if you lose one allele of NGRL, your epigenetic status of your cell is being modified. I mean, as if you were aging a bit too fast, the cells, I mean, okay? This is another, and as if you had been submitted to a slow and progressive oxidative stress. And in fact, if you inflict a strong oxidative stress to your cells by injecting 6-hydroxydopamine in the brain, which is a drug which is specifically captured by the TH neurons, you can see that you have exactly the same problem. You have your DNA breaks, you have a modification of the MeCP2 staining, you have a modification of the DAPI with the chromocenter distribution, you have a modification of the nucleolin distribution, and this is a real oxidative stress. So you have a lot of similarities between losing one NGRL allele and having an oxidative stress. And this means that NGRL protects against oxidative stress, and this can be seen in many ways. One of the ways is to inflect the oxidative stress in NGRL heterozygotes. And if you do that, you will see that, in fact, in the heterozygote, the number of breaks in your DNA is higher in the mutant, and also the number of cells that will die immediately is also higher in the mutant. So this means that NGRL protects against the 6-hydroxydopamine, and indeed, we had to show it. We injected 6-hydroxydopamine directly into the NGRL, which is a very, very harsh treatment, and then 30 minutes later, we came with NGRL. As you can save yourself. And you can also save them with the TX2. I put this on purpose, okay? And what happens later is that as soon as you have injected NGRL, now you have a kinetic of nucleolin restructuration. You, in fact, restore your epigenetic marks. So that after 7 days, all the epigenetic marks have been stabilized. So you have saved your cells, and you have sort of rejuvenated the nuclei of your cells, meaning that you have an epigenetic restoration of the cells due to the injection and internalization of the protein. Now, again, this is to keep in mind for when I will get to the cortex, which is more interesting than the NGRL, but you know, this is also to keep in mind. When we injected NGRL, after we had injected 6-hydroxydopamine and did an RNA-seq experiment, you can see that one of the genes which is upregulated very heavily with a high significance is GAT45B, okay, which is a surviving enzyme, but also a demethylating enzyme. And this is a direct target of NGRL, because if you inject NGRL in the presence of cyclohexamide, which blocks protein synthesis, the messenger RNA is still activated. So you don't need protein synthesis to have the effect of NGRL internalized by the cells. In fact, in the mutant, in the heterozygote, you have a decrease in GAT45B expression as well. Something else that we could see is that when you have this oxidative stress, you have an increase in line 1 expression. So what are lines genes? The lines are transposable elements. As you know, 45% of our genome is composed of transposable elements. Most of them have been fossilized, so they don't move anymore, which doesn't mean that they are not transcribed, at least in part. Okay, not full length probably, but still transcribed. But some are still moving. In the mouse, there are 3,000 lines which are still moving. And in the human, we still have 100 lines which are still moving. Moving, this means that they are transcribed with the ORF1, which is a packaging protein, I would say, and ORF2, which is another reading frame which encodes for a reverse transcriptase and a nuclease. And then when they go back, they are transcribed. They are retrotranscribed into DNA with a nick in the genome which is being made, and now you insert a new line in your genome. So there are sort of, I would say, invading the genome. That's why, in fact, during the evolution of the humans, we have invaded 45% of our genome. Now, many of these sequences are regulatory sequences. Okay. Now, what we did was to look at the expression of the lines, because we had this regulation, and the surprise came that we dissected this substantia nigra with a laser capture, by laser capture, and what we could see is that, in fact, lines, the three families of lines, A, TF, and GF, less for GF, are expressed in these cells. They are full length, so it's your entire genome which is transcribed, genes which is transcribed. And as you can see here with the antibody against ORF1P, which is this reading, open reading frame here, you have the protein in the aminergic neurons, but not only in the aminergic neurons, you have this protein expressed in many cells. It's more expressed in the TH cells, in fact. Okay, and this is the co-localization of ORF1P and TH, and this is the erasement of the staining when you use the peptide, which was when you incubate the antibody with the peptide used to raise the antibody. Now, if you look in the 6-hydroxydopamine or in the heterozygote, what you can see is that in the 6-hydroxydopamine treated animals, you have an increase in ORF1P expression. And also in the heterozygote, you have an increase in ORF1P expression. So then in these two conditions that increase oxidative stress, you have an increase in the synthesis of ORF1P. I mean, you have an increase in line expression. And this is interesting because we believe, and I think we have shown, as you will see, that this increase in line expression is responsible for making nicks inside the DNA. If the cells die, it's primarily because the ORF2P protein is just nicking, if I may say, the DNA. So if you look, for example, here in culture, what happens? You see that you have the oxoguanine, which goes up very rapidly. You have the breaks that come up rapidly. This is in culture. And in culture, you add H2O2 to have the oxidative stress. And here is the expression of the line 1 TGF, very rapid, after 15 minutes. And this is by fish, the expression of line 1. And these are the breaks coming up. Now, the question is, are the lines responsible for making breaks in the DNA? And there is a protein which is the repressor of line expression. It's called PIWI. PIWI binds pi RNAs, and the PIWI pi complex goes to the genome and blocks line transcription. Okay. Now, here what we did was to inflect the oxidative stress using H2O2. You see that you have an increase in fish in N1 expression by fish. And now, if you add PIWI, you block this increase. And this is what you can see here. Quantified. At the same time, if you do that, you block the formation of the breaks. So that you need to have the lines expressed to have break formation in your DNA upon the oxidative stress. Now, if you can use a plasmid encoding line 1 and a mutated plasmid with two mutations, which is an inactive line, you can see that if you do that with the line, you increase the breaks, the mutated protein line does not do it, but if you use a reverse transcriptase inhibitor, you inhibit the formation of the DNA from your plasmid, now you block the formation of breaks. And the same thing if you use the VSI RNA against ORF2P, you don't have breaks anymore, but you don't have, as you can see, quantified here, okay? And in this case, it's H2O2, you add stavidine, the reverse transcriptase inhibitor, and you block the formation of breaks induced by H2O2. So yeah, you might say that at least in culture, you have a modification, a repression. The lines are responsible for making breaks, and that you can repress, you can block the breaks by repressing the lines. This is true in culture. It's also true in vivo, as you can see here. In this case, we injected the 6-hydroxydopamine. And we injected stabudine, and you can see that stabudine will save your cells. The siRNA against OFF2P will also save your cells. And this is the NGRL1 heterozygote. So as you know, in the NGRL1 heterozygote, you have a slow decrease in the number of cells that die progressively. But if you express PWE, you save at least 50% of your cells. So even in the NGRL heterozygote system, in vivo, PWE, meaning line repression, is able to save the cells against progressive death. Well, this is interesting, but we had to show that there is a link with NGRL. So in this case, we added H2O2 to the midbrain cells. All midbrain cells at E14.5 express NGRL, right? So you do an H2O2 treatment, you increase line expression, and you will make breaks, indeed, as you can see here. Now, if you incubate your cells with NGRL2, which is internalized, you block line expression, and you block the formation of the breaks. Okay, so that you could say that, and you can say that NGRL is a repressor of line expression, and it's a direct repressor, because here again, what we did was to inject NGRL in the brain, in this case. And if you do that, you can see that you have repression of line expression. And it's a direct repression because we use cyclohexamide at the same time. So we injected cyclohexamide. We block transcription. So we block translation. So we don't need to have an intervening protein. But you can still see the repression. And if we take an activator NGRL, NGRL is primarily a repressor. So if you link to the homodomain of NGRL, the VP64, which is the activating domain of the herpes virus, four times, you see that in the presence of cyclohexamide, you have an increase in line expression. And in fact, this also kills the neurons in vivo. So the final thing was to show that in a gel shift experiment, NGRL retards the promoter of line 1, and in a chromatin immunoprecipitation, you can pull down the promoter of line 1 TFGF, and line 1A. And this is erased by the incubation with the bona fide binding site of NGRL on the genome, which is NP6. So this is the demonstration that we have really a direct repression of line expression by NGRL. So the model that has been developed in the lab is a bit complex, but it's pretty simple, in fact. NGRL is acting at several levels. It is acting at the levels of the ATP formation, and we need ATP to save the cells, but ATP might be responsible also for the restructuration of the chromatin, because ATP is necessary for many proteins which are involved in chromatin reorganization. NGRL modifies indeed the chromatin. With aging or with oxidative stress, you reopen the chromatin and you increase line expression, which is repressed by NGRL. So we believe that this protein is active at several levels to block line expression and thus to block line over expression. I want to be very careful because, as you will see on this slide, which is the model that we have, we need lines to make breaks and we need breaks to transcribe because the DNA is super cold. Like a topoisomerase, the line expression is important to have the expression of long genes in particular. But this can be repaired. In fact, you make breaks all the time. Your DNA is broken all the time. You think and you make breaks. You sleep and dream and you make breaks. If you're totally stupid and do nothing, you don't make breaks. But in this case, they are repaired. More or less well, because this is a non-homologous end-joining repair, so you introduce some mistakes, probably why we age, right? And but if you overexpress lines too much, you make more breaks than you can repair, and then you have a problem, okay? So now I will go to the interesting point, you may think, okay, which is the cortex. Now, I met this guy something in 2003 or 5, something like that, right, in Tokyo. And we were a bit younger at the time. Well, Takao, you know. We are working for that. I mean, James is working on our case. And the work on the cortex was done thus primarily in collaboration with Takao and Takao's group. And Sayaka, I mean, did a beautiful study which has been reminded yesterday by Ariel. And Hing Chiong Li has been working also in collaboration with us. We got some mice from Isao Matsuo, OTX2, the first OTX2 flux mice that we used. Now we have others. We got some mice from Dario Acampora and Antonio Simeone. And in Paris, I mean, the people who've been working on this list, I will not name them, but I will leave the slide long enough, but can really have a look at it, okay? Clémence has left. She's now in England, and Marine is in the private company. Julien is in the United States, but you know, these people have moved forward and found positions, which is very nice. Now, this work has to do with something that you now are very familiar with, which is the regulation of the critical period. So on this slide, you see here the choroid plexus, which makes Engrel, which is released into the CSF, captured by the PV cells. First threshold, I open plasticity. Second threshold, I close plasticity. And if I can go back across the second threshold, I can reopen plasticity in the adult. And one way to do that is to express a single-shot antibody that will block the TX2 in the CSF and reduce the amount of OTX2 gaining access to the PV cells. So this, yes, is now very familiar, right? I don't have to insist too much on that. So we wanted to look at the target genes, the non-cell autonomous target genes in the PV cells. And what we did was very simple. We compared the expression of all genes by RNA-seq in the layer 4 of the cerebral cortex, in the visual cortex, at P100, no plasticity in the wild-type animal, and at P30, plasticity in the wild-type animals, and P30 also in the heterozygote, because at P30 in the heterozygote, you don't open plasticity. So we have two situations without plasticity, and one situation with plasticity, and you can see that all the genes which are upregulated in the plastic situation are putative target genes, okay? So you have this list here. Now, because you can infuse a TX2, you can also infuse a TX2 with cyclohexamide. And if you do that, you have the direct targets because you have the protein synthesis inhibitor. And if you do that, you have two guys that stick out. And the two guys that stick out are GAD45, B and G, okay? Remember in the case of Engrel, GAD45B was a direct target. And remember that a TX2 was also protecting against oxidative stress. Now, what you can do is to block a TX2 in the adult, and you can reopen plasticity, as I said, and you see that immediately you have an upregulation of GAD45. And you can also add the other plasticity genes, like EGR, ARC, FOS, EGR4, and you can see that when you upregulate GAD45 by injecting GAD45 with the virus, I mean having GAD45 be expressed in the adult thanks to a viral vector, as you can see here, you have this upregulation. You have a very good correlation between GAD45 expression and plasticity gene expression, and you reopen plasticity in the adult. So GAD45 is necessary and sufficient in the adult to reopen plasticity. So what happens at the epigenetic level? Now, GAD45 is a protein that removes the methyl from the CpGs, or CpH or CpA, because all the Cp's, in fact, in the brain. So Jessica and Damien, I mean, decided to look at the staining by MeCP2, for example, but also H3K9, and I will not show everything because I don't want to keep you for too long. But when you do that, you can look before, during, after the critical period, and when you reinduce plasticity in the adult. And as you can see here, if you look at the pattern of staining by MeCP2, you can see that you go from in the PV cells, you go from a situation where you have several small spots, like here, the situation when you have one big spot primarily. So you modify your MESCP2 staining. And you can see here between P20 and P100, the number of MESCP2 foci is going down. But it's only in the WFA positive cells, not in the others. And if you look at the staining with MESCP2, you see that at P30, this is the size of the foci, and at P100, this is the size of the foci. In fact, it's not that you have less MESCP2 binding sites, so that they are the same number, but what you have is a reorganization of your chromatin. So you have a, I would say, a structure of the chromatin which does not allow plasticity in the adult. And now if you block a TX2 in the adult, you go into this situation, you have, or if you inject, or I mean express GAT45B, now you go back to the plasticity pattern. You increase the number of foci. You don't do it with the STSV PAC6 mouse, because PAC6 does not recognize the TX2. You can also look at the breaks. You see that you have a higher number of breaks in during the critical period, during plasticity, and you lose your breaks as your brain matures. And this, again, is only in the WFA plus cells, not in the WFA minus cells, okay? And if you reinduce plasticity in the adult by expressing the antibody against the TX2, you, again, provoke the formation of breaks, which are correlated with the activation of plasticity. OFF1P. Indeed. So this is now at P30, and you see that at P30, the intensity of expression of OFF1P, meaning line expression, is much bigger than at P100. Now, this is indeed, again, in the WFA cells, not in the cells that do not express WFA. And if you infuse so this is the breaks. Now, if you infuse stavidin, which is a reverse transcriptase inhibitor, now you block the expression, you block the formation of your breaks. So this means that also in the cortex, blocking reverse transcriptase is enough to block the formation of breaks in your DNA. So we have exactly the situation that we had in the substantia nigra. Very, very similar. So this is my conclusion slide, my second one. You have a TX2 coming into the PV cells, you open plasticity, and you make breaks because you induce line expression. And with the end of plasticity, you have, and these breaks are necessary for the expression of the plasticity genes. And in the non-plastic state, you have less line expression and you reduce the number of breaks, and thus, this is the model that we have, you reduce the expression of plasticity genes, which you can re-induce if indeed you force the formation, you express the lines, or in particular, not the lines, but in this case, if you overexpress GAT45. So, you see the similarity with what we see in the substantia nigra is extremely close. I mean, we're working on that. And they are all linked to, in the case of the substantia nigra, it's linked to the oxidative stress. In this case, it's linked to the OTX2 internalization, I mean, the salt period. But we believe that the two domains will converge for a single model, explaining that we need breaks for expression, but we need to control the breaks, and that these transposable elements are key actors in the regulation of plasticity and in physiology in the adult animals. So the people that have been helping us, indeed the Collège de France, INSERM, CNRS, and the ERC program, which is funding us. Thank you.